Glenna was only 5 the first time she saw him. She'd seen pictures, of course, and one silly movie, but none had matched her vision of the elf that brought the icicles and hoarfrost of winter. And she didn't believe he nipped at people's noses. That seemed a very mean thing to do, and Glenna was not a mean little girl. On that fateful day when she was 5, she and her brothers had gone skating on Merrill's Pond. All the kids from Grenville went there, and it was understood that no one was to skate beyond the yellow tape the sheriff and his deputies put out every year. That forbidden side of the pond was partially hidden by a stand of trees, and the ice over there never seemed as solid, even in the dead of winter. But Glenna's brothers Rick and Andy were adventurous and thought little of the warnings they got from their parents, teachers, and the local constabulary. They usually paid Glenna 50 cents to serve as a lookout. If any adult came over to yell at them, they would say Glenna wandered past the yellow tape and they, being good big brothers, had gone to rescue her. There was a clause in their sibling contract that if they were caught and Glenna got in trouble, usually no dessert and no TV for a week, then they would buy her whatever toy she fancied at the mall as long as it wasn't over $10. Glenna had gotten a new doll and a play tea set in this fashion. So Glenna watched for any grown-ups and thought about what she might want if she got in trouble. Rick and Andy were daring each other to skate closer and closer to a particularly dicey patch of ice where the roots of a tree were partially exposed. Andy called to her, and she turned to see him try again to perform an axle jump. This usually meant that he landed on his butt, but Glenna thought he was getting better at it. Rick was ignoring both of them, checking out something out near an exposed root. Andy built up speed and leaped. He came down a little off balance, but recovered his footing, making it his first successful attempt. Glenna applauded and looked over to see if Rick had seen the stunt. Rick was gone. She frantically scanned their side of the pond, but he was nowhere to be seen. Andy had also registered their older brother's disappearance and sped over to the spot where they had seen him last. As Glenna hurried over, she happened to look down and saw a young man staring up at her through a patch of ice as clear as glass. He was in his 20s and very handsome. He had an unruly mop of brown hair that swirled in the freezing water, and his ears were oh so slightly pointed. More remarkable than any of this, though, was his skin, which was the pale blue of a robin's egg. It was a most lovely shade of blue, she would think later. The blue young man smiled at Glenna and winked. Then he swam off as fast as a shark, dragging something dark behind him. She had a glimpse of Rick's red and gold muffler, and then they were gone. Glenna knew then that Jack Frost had taken her brother. She also knew no one would believe her. She kept quiet, except to corroborate Andy's story that Rick had wandered over to the wrong side of the ice, Andy had gone to fetch him, and she had followed. In this way, they hoped to avoid being punished. Bad enough to lose their brother, but to be chastised on the top of that? Indeed, the subject of discipline and its expressions in being grounded, no desserts or TV, was ever brought up. Glenna felt a little guilty about that, but never enough to amend their story. A search was performed, but it was clear Rick had fallen through the ice and couldn't have survived for more than a few minutes in the freezing water. It was highly possible they would recover his body in the spring thaw, but no one mentioned that to Andy, Glenna, or their mother. Such occurrences were infrequent, but all too unpleasant. Glenna hoped that Jack Frost had taken Rick off to visit the Snow Queen, or Mother Nature, or even Santa Claus. Such stories made her envious, and she considered jumping into the freezing water of Merrill's Pond on purpose, but that seemed rude, like walking into someone's house when you hadn't been invited. She also thought of putting a candle where Rick had gone through the ice, but her parents wouldn't let her go to the pond unless an adult was watching her. Besides, she had to believe Jack would bring him home. As the years went by, memories of her brother grew cloudy, and she forgot all about Jack Frost. At 13, Glenna was worried about boys and fashion and music. She was just beginning to think about whom she was becoming and how she might want to spend her adulthood. She had a brief period of regret when she packed up her dolls, books of fairy tales, and play tea sets and gave them to the Salvation Army. but sooner posters of fairies and unicorns had been replaced by teen idols and television vampires. Her birthday fell on November 1st, and Glenna realized that this Halloween might be her last for trick-or-treating. Andy used to go with her, but he was in high school now and preferred boy-girl parties to the quest for candy and treats. But she was able to convince her parents she was old enough to go out and about with her girlfriend Katie and then attend a party up the street at Janice Patterson's house. Katie went as a witch, and Glenna was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, a show she had discovered on Hulu the previous summer. She was hoping to see Henry Sloan at the party, and being Buffy meant she could wear a pretty party outfit and not wear any gross monster makeup, although she had to admit Katie looked pretty to her with her velvet cat ears and cat nose and whiskers done in eyebrow pencil. By 7 o'clock, it was already dark, and she and Katie set out on a wide circuit that would bring them to Janice's by 8. Katie was worried what others might think of them trick-or-treating, but Glenna had that worked out. They would share their loot with the other party guests. Others might think it was silly to go out bag in hand, but who would turn down miniature chocolate bars and popcorn balls? The two girls strolled, not wanting to appear over-anxious, although the mood of shrieking and running children was infectious. Instead, they commented on how mature they had become and how they would soon be in high school, and then their real adult adventures would start. Glenna breathed in the crisp air, delighting in the tangy smell of wood smoke and the scorched vegetable smell of jack-o'-lanterns which flickered on nearly every doorstep. Some favored spring and summer, but she always loved winter. Maybe it had to do with her being born in November. All she knew was that she reveled in the long, cold nights and the short, crisp days. She and Katie got separated at the McClintock house. It was a tall and dark Victorian affair, the kind of house all children and some adults believe is haunted. Katie refused to go to the door, even though the porch had several merry jack-o'-lanterns and a jolly paper skeleton out front. Glenna had read to Mrs. McClintock for one of her Girl Scout badges and knew there was nothing in the house but old furniture, lots of old books, and several old cats. None of her prodding could get Katie to go with her, and Katie said she would meet her next door at the Bursons, whose house was modern and sterile, and not at all haunted-looking. Glenna watched as Katie moved briskly down the walk, and another group of little ghosts and monsters studiously avoided the big house. It made her feel sorry for Mrs. McClintock, who was a widow and couldn't help it if her house looked scary, even in daylight. Mrs. McClintock was delighted to see her. The old woman had made 2 dozen gingerbread men and another dozen ginger and spice cupcakes. They smelled of Halloween and Christmas, of fires in the hearth and frost in the window panes. No one had come to see her, not one. When she learned that Glenna was going to a party, she wrapped everything up in a box for her to take. Glenna protested, but old Mrs. McClintock wouldn't hear otherwise. Glenna had always been kind to her, and she said she wanted to return the favor. Glenna left the box of cookies and cupcakes in a stout grocery bag in one of her hands and a pillowcase of candy in the other. She had to stick her Buffy steak in her back pocket, being careful not to stick herself, and bade Mrs. McClintock goodbye. As she stepped out onto the porch, her eyes detected a faint movement off to her right, where the wraparound porch disappeared into the darkness. "Hello," came a voice. It was a kind-sounding voice, but Glenna knew better than to approach a stranger in the dark. Feeling self-conscious, she moved purposefully to the stairs. As she reached the top one, he stepped into the light of the pumpkins and a yellowish porch light. He was dressed like someone out of a Dickens novel, like the Artful Dodger, with top hat and muffler, and he wore velvet gloves. For a moment, she thought the muffler was red and gold, but it was a solid gray color. His skin, though, was a pale robin's egg color, and his ears were subtly pointed. "You're the boy from the pond," she whispered, and he bowed low. "I'm Jack Frost," she finished, even though she knew she was being rude. His eyes twinkled and his lips curved up into a smile. Glenna thought he was the most handsome boy she had ever seen. "Jack Frost," he repeated, as if tasting the words and deciding they were like sweet and buttery frosting. "Yes," he said, "I like that." "You took my brother away," Glenna said, memory and accusation crowding into her statement. He looked down, a little crestfallen. "I didn't know he was your brother," he said, and she could see he felt guilty about it. "So? Bring him back. That's really not possible, he said. Too much time has gone by. Glinner figured he meant that her brother was now acclimated to the fairy world, and he would find the human world unbearable to live in. Will you take me to see him? He looked at her, and his eyes shimmered as if each one held a tiny aurora borealis. I want to, he said, but you could never come back. Are you ready to leave all of this behind? She thought about it and decided she wasn't, not really. There were some things in the world she really did love, and some things she wanted to try. Not yet, but you could come back for me. He shook his head. This is the one night of the year where it's cold enough for me to leave the pond and not cause suspicion with my appearance. I won't tell anyone. He smiled, and she noticed his teeth looked very long, and she thought of Red Riding Hood and felt a tiny spider of panic creep down her spine. He saw it too and became sad. You're not ready, Glenna. Someday, maybe, but not today. Then she heard Katie call to her, and she turned to look. Coming, she said, but when she looked back to where he had been, he was gone. She called to him softly, not wanting to bother Mrs. McClintock, but he was gone. It was only when she was at Janice's party and dancing with Sean Purcell that she realized he knew her name. She never told anyone of the encounter on the McClintock porch, even when they found the old woman dead the next day, apparently of hypothermia. As the old woman's furnace had been on and was in good order, authorities were baffled, particularly by the patches of frostbite on her hands and shoulders and the puncture wounds in her neck. They did interview Glenna, and she told them everything save her conversation with Jack Frost. She knew from books and television that people never believe such things unless they saw them with their own eyes, and sometimes not even then. 5 years came and went quickly, and her memory of Jack faded in the rush of middle school and high school, dating and football games, term papers and SAT scores. Glenna acquitted herself admirably in school and won a scholarship to Boston University, where she planned to study literature and writing. Her first quarter went well enough, and she drove down to Grenville for Christmas, her little car loaded with gifts and laundry. On the way to Grenville, she saw the turnoff from Merrill's Pond and took it on a whim. She hadn't really ever said goodbye to her brother Rick, had she? At least she could do was wish him a Merry Christmas. Truth to tell, she didn't remember him all that well. Family photos help, but she'd always been closer to Andy since there were only 3 years separating them, not five like with Rick. The pond was deserted, it was getting near sundown, and everyone was home preparing for the big day. The pond was preternaturally silent, the only sound the crunching of her boots through the snow and her breath that steamed out before her in little white puffs. The air was so cold it actually hurt a little to breathe it in, but she did, relishing that feeling, that connection to winter. She looked over the white expanse of the pond with its familiar demarcation of yellow tape. She knew local parents used Rick's death as a cautionary tale, and that few, if any, ever crossed that barrier. She wished she could walk to where they lost him, but the way around the pond was impassable in the winter, and she hadn't brought any skates. Besides, skating at night on Merrill's Pond was something not even her brothers had tried. Hello again. She knew before turning who it was, and her heart leapt a little bit, as if her soulmate had called to her. Glenna turned, and there was Jack, now dressed in slacks, a turtleneck and sports coat, something people might have worn in her father's youth. He saw her and smiled awkwardly. I never seem to know what is appropriate attire up here. You look nice, she said, but he was more than that. He was handsome in a way that went beyond human, as if a force of nature or a breathtaking vista were somehow made flesh. Have you been waiting long? She asked, sensing she knew the answer. That isn't an easy question to answer, he admitted. Since I first saw you, a very short time for me, a long time for you. Since I realized I wasn't happy being alone, oh, more years than you might care to count. An awful, lonely wait. She realized then that she was going to go with him, that part of her had always known so, that her life above had merely been marking time and waiting. She knew they would find her car and think the worst. She thought of leaving them a note, but they would not believe it if she told them the truth. They would think she was mad or had been coerced. Where she was going, what she would be, these were mysteries for her and her sweetheart alone. Somehow she had known that always as well. They would search and put up flyers and make impassioned pleas on the news, and they would wait with dread when the thaw came, but she wouldn't be found. She was so happy, so excited, but the thought of what her parents and brother would endure brought tears to her eyes. Then she knew what she must do, and he waited while she wrote a note and pinned it to the steering wheel of her car. It read, "Dear Mom, Dad, and Andy, please don't be sad. I'm happy, and I'm safe. I love you, Glenna." She looked into his strange and wonderful eyes, and he smiled as snowflakes tumbled and danced around them. "Will it hurt?" she asked. Jack Frost shook his head, then took her in his arms. He fed on her warmth until she was as cold and immobile like marble, then gave her some of his own warmth in return. She awoke as something like Glenna and something not, and looked into the face of winter, of the man who ushered in the cold sleep of the world to help make way for spring. She looked off in the direction of her house and silently said goodbye to her family. Perhaps one day she might see them again, watching us through a window under the ice of the pond. Then, as the church bells heralded Christmas Day, Glenna and Jack Frost slipped beneath the ice and sped away to all the wonderful places she would now call home.